tiny chemical messengers from the glands in one part of the body are sent out to control other parts of the body. They change anything from appetite to stress, blood sugar to sleep, and growth to sexuality. I'm talking about hormones. They control just about everything in our bodies and minds all day, every day. So are we just victims of those hormones, held hostage to the whims of the chemicals? Or can we control them? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. On today's show, we have one of my favourite guests who's constantly researching the superpowers of plant-based eating. There's a chef in the kitchen to tease our taste buds, and Sean will work us out. Plus, we'll pause along the way and discuss a condition called endometriosis. First off, though, it's time for the news. In the headlines today, chronic stress linked to Alzheimer's, exercise essential for poor sleepers, and how we eat changes cancer's progress. The hypothalamus in one part of the brain sends messages to the pituitary gland in another part of the brain, which then talks to the adrenal gland, and that is called the HPA axis, and it's the major stress response pathway in the body that controls the production of cortisol. That's our primary stress hormone. Dysregulation of the HPA axis is common in Alzheimer's disease, and scientists are asking why. David Groth is a molecular geneticist from Curtin University in Australia, and he co-authored a recent study suggesting genetic variations within these pathways can result in greater cortisol production. That then primes the immune cells of the brain to increase inflammation, creating a toxic environment for brain cells, which then degenerate and die. So take steps to reduce your stress levels now and prevent Alzheimer's later. And deal with stress by taking regular exercise, meditation and prayer, eating well, and of course, prioritizing sleep. And when it comes to sleep, there's a bad news, good news story out of the British Journal of Sports Medicine. The bad news? Many of us are suffering from poor sleep patterns, and that is a big problem. You see, poor sleep is associated with high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke, heart failure, and heart disease. And the good news is that even if we are poor sleepers, regular exercise tends to counteract the health effects of poor sleep. So while exercise is always important, it's even more crucial for those of us who aren't getting a solid 7 to 9 hours of sleep most nights. One in three cancers in women is breast cancer, and a recent study shows that it's never too late to make lifestyle changes even after the diagnosis is made and treatment begun. You see, there's a growth hormone called IGF-1 that can promote the development of breast cancer cells to make them resistant to therapy. Researchers followed a 47-year-old woman being treated for breast cancer who transitioned to a whole food, plant-based diet and fasted overnight for 16 hours every day. They found her IGF levels dropped by 22%. As a side benefit, her glucose and cholesterol levels dropped dramatically too. Much larger studies are needed to prove the benefits of a plant-based diet and intermittent fasting in the management of cancer. Meanwhile, I think it's safe to say that a whole food, plant-strong eating pattern is a wise choice for us all. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Our extra special guest today is President of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He's a researcher and a best-selling author of numerous books on health. That's Dr. Neil Barnard. Not many health authors write about hormones, but Dr. Barnard has tackled it head-on in his book, Your Body in Balance. I asked him what prompted him to write about hormones. Dr. Barnard, it's wonderful to have you back on the show, and you've got a book called Your Body in Balance, which is all about hormones. Why did you think this was such an important topic that you'd write a whole book on it?
Well, first of all, it's great to be back with you today. And yes, what happened really was that the old idea was you would eat a bad food and you would get a disease. So if you eat high cholesterol foods, you'll get a cholesterol problem, or too much salt would lead to a blood pressure problem. But we decided to, or the reason I decided to put out this book was that I got very excited about the fact that we can control our hormones, and our hormones control everything in your body. So your thyroid gland makes thyroid hormone, which gives you energy. Your insulin hormone from the pancreas controls blood sugar, and that controls lots of things. Testosterone, estrogen. These are things that up until recently people thought couldn't be controlled. But now we know that you can do it with breakfast and lunch and dinner. So bottom line, hormones control your body. Food controls your hormones. Let's put it to work.
Wow, so powerful. So can we start with estrogen? Because that's probably the most studied of all the hormones because of its relationship with breast cancer. More estrogen exposure over a lifetime increases your risk of breast cancer. So what foods can raise and lower estrogen or active estrogen?
You know, this was something that we really kind of discovered by accident, I have to say. It wasn't something that we set out to look at. I was sitting here at my desk and a woman called me up who had terrible menstrual pain. You know, a lot of women have some cramping, but for maybe 1 in 10, it's like off the scale, I'm not going to work today type of pain. And so I recommended to her a diet that had really two steps. One was to avoid animal products. So it's a vegan diet, but also to keep oily foods really low. And what she found is that this really just prevented the pain into the future. And we followed that up with a randomized clinical trial that showed the same kind of thing. But the reason we did this was exactly what you were saying, that people have looked at how foods can affect estrogen in order to reduce the risk of breast cancer. And going back probably 25 years, researchers have been looking at how can you do this. And two big themes. One is get the fat out of your diet. And this especially means beef fat, chicken fat, fish oil, but it also means really kind of any kind of fat. For some reason, we have never quite figured out when women eat a little bit less fat, and men too, when you eat less fatty foods, your estrogen level will fall a little bit. But the other thing is to pump up the fiber, and that's beans and vegetables and fruits and whole grains. And fiber helps your body to get rid of unwanted estrogens. So with a young woman who called me up on the phone and said, I can't get out of bed because I got terrible pain, what she found is that by eliminating the animal products and keeping oils low, that means that everything you're eating has fiber, and her menstrual pain just never came back as long as she stuck with the diet. And we found lots of success with that since that time. So the foods that are really powerful, vegetables, fruits, beans, whole grains, pretty much the whole group. But you want to get away from the animal products, get away from the greasy foods. And that's, for many people, just life-changing.
And there are many, many women out there looking for life-changing solutions. So stick around for more from Dr. Barnard in the next segment. But first, here's what the doctor ordered.
That's it. I've eaten my last potato.
But you love potatoes. What's happened?
Well, you of all people should know carbs are poison.
Are you sure?
Of course, I read it in this food magazine. It says...
carbs are poison.
See, you do know.
Oh, I know all the slogans, Daniel, but they're not really true, most of them.
So are you telling me they're just trying to sell a magazine and they're really not interested in our health?
Well, whatever the motive, to say that carbs are poison is simply wrong. You see, simple carbs are generally bad. Complex carbs are actually really good for us.
So you always have these 101 complicated rules. I'm a simple man. Can't you make it simple?
Well, I'll try. So if it's a whole vegetable, fruit, grain or nut, and we haven't done much with it, it will be loaded with complex carbohydrates, and that's good. But if we've refined and processed it, then it turns it into simple carbohydrates, and that's not good. And then depending how much of each we eat can be good or bad.
Well, that is simple, but what does it mean?
Well, let's take a salad. A salad is full of lovely whole foods, right? But then we pour on lots of dressing and cheese and croutons. Now we've turned that meal into a refined meal on a bed of lettuce. That's not good. And then if we take brown rice, that's generally better than white rice. Whole grain pasta is better than white pasta.
But Narada, what about my precious potatoes? They're bad, aren't they?
Well, I think you can keep your precious potatoes because they are a good source of complex carbohydrates. But...
No buts.
But...
Oh no, here it comes again.
If you load it up with sour cream and cheese and butter or fry it, then you've turned your potato from a friend to a foe.
So keep the potatoes but lose the fries?
Exactly. Well, and the butter. If it's a whole food, then likely it's a superfood. Go ahead and eat it. Doctor's orders.
Many women during the course of their reproductive years are affected by a condition called endometriosis. And since we're talking about hormones today, it's the perfect time to delve into it. The inside of the uterus is lined with endometrial tissue, and when that same tissue is found growing outside the uterus, we call it endometriosis. It can be on the outside of the uterus, on the ovaries, the tubes, in the abdominal cavity or on the peritoneum, or in the intestines and in other places as well. Wherever it lands, it results in inflammation and pain. It affects up to 1 in 10 women, causing bleeding between periods, infertility, and chronic pelvic pain. In fact, around 40% of women with pelvic pain will be found to have endometriosis. And women with endo tend to have higher levels of estrogen, which tends to promote the growth of endometrial tissue, and so therapy aims to reduce the impact of estrogen. A typical starting point is hormonal contraception, either as a continuous combination of estrogen and progesterone to override the monthly cycle, or as progesterone on its own, and that can be given in a pill, as an injection, or even via an intrauterine device that sits in the uterus. Estrogen blockers can create an artificial menopause, and then we add a little estrogen so that you don't feel so bad. Surgery can be done to remove the deposits with or without removing the uterus. And medications and surgery used together or alone will not necessarily prevent endometriosis coming back in the longer term. So you may be asking, is there nothing else that can be done? Well, stick around. There's so much more. The staff at PCRM have taken a close look at the research, and this is what they've published. Estrogen levels can be lowered 10 to 25% by reducing dietary fat and increasing dietary fiber. Endometriosis occurs more frequently in women eating more saturated fats and trans fats, both of which can be found in meat and dairy. For example, the Nurses' Health Study number 2 found women eating more than 2 servings of red meat were 56% more likely to have endometriosis than those eating less than 1 serving a week. Chicken increased the risk by 14%. The same study found consumption of low glycemic index foods was associated with a lower risk of endometriosis, or endo. And a couple of other studies showed more fruit and fiber, less endo. Eating seaweed has been found to reduce estrogen levels for women. Now, painful periods are helped significantly by a low-fat, vegan diet, which is loaded with anti-inflammatory compounds. And remember, inflammation is a key feature of endometriosis. Also, a whole food diet changes the gut's microbiome, and that results in a number of anti-inflammatory compounds being released by those gut bacteria into the body. The effect of vitamin D is interesting. A recent review found that in 3 out of 4 animal studies, giving vitamin D made the endometriosis shrink. And 4 in vitro studies, that's in the laboratory, found that vitamin D decreases the invasion and replication of endometriosis lesions. Further studies are needed to see if it prevents and treats endo, but we know that low vitamin D levels are associated with an increased risk of endo, increased severity of symptoms. One study had women with endo taking 50,000 units every 2 weeks for 12 weeks. They had less pelvic pain, lower inflammation, and increased antioxidant capacity. So what about antioxidants like vitamin C or vitamin E? Well, one study found that women with endo had a 30% lower intake of vitamin C and 40% less vitamin E than those without endo. And a later study found supplementing vitamin C and vitamin E reduced endometriosis symptoms. But why not eat your vitamin C or your vitamin E in that lovely citrus fruit, a nice red bell pepper or capsicum, and if you want vitamin E in all those nuts and seeds? It's a great way to get your medicine. That's just more evidence that our diet can alter the action of estrogen in the body. And speaking of estrogen, it's widely believed that soy can cause or accelerate breast cancer because of its estrogenic properties. So I asked well-known researcher into diet and disease, Dr. Neil Barnard, if soy is associated with breast cancer. So if we go back to the breast cancer issue just briefly, a lot of women who have had treatment for breast cancer are told by their oncologist or their family practitioner, stay away from soy. Why is that thought to be implicated, and what does the science actually say?
It has turned out to be completely a myth, the soy myth. The idea started with, perhaps understandably, researchers discovered that soybeans contain isoflavones. And isoflavones are natural compounds in soy products, and they're in soy milk, and everything comes out of a soybean. And they will attach to estrogen receptors. And so that understandably caused people to think, well, they'll cause cancer. However, it didn't work out that way. One study after another has shown that women consuming more soy products, like soy milk or soy yogurt or edamame, they have substantially less breast cancer, about 30% less. And also women who have had cancer in the past, if they eat a lot of soy, they are less likely to die of their cancer. So soybeans are clearly protective. They're not part of the problem. And now we actually know why. There are 2 kinds of estrogen receptors. And there are alpha receptors, which are kind of like the gas pedal for cancer, that estradiol, in which your body makes, will attach to the alpha receptor and will increase cancer risk. The isoflavones attach to the beta receptor, and that's not the gas pedal, that is the brake. And so soybeans clearly reduce the risk of cancer.
Now, in your book, you talk about dairy and the risk of breast cancer. Tell us a little bit more before we move on to another topic.
Well, dairy products are about the only source in the diet, or one of the few sources in the diet, of actual estradiol. I mean, that's the female sex hormone that is a match for yours. And so if a person feeds some cheese to their son or their 8-year-old daughter, they are feeding them estradiol. And what happens is cows make it, and it gets into their bloodstream. But cows on dairy farms are artificially inseminated every year to keep them pregnant on a regular schedule, and they are milked well into their pregnancy. They are making lots of estradiol when they're pregnant. That goes into the milk, and it goes into your cheese or your ice cream. And so men who consume dairy products, including certainly cheese, and women who consume it are getting measurable amounts of female sex hormones that are an exact match of theirs. And it's not like the soy isoflavones, which attach to beta. This is the one that attaches to alpha receptors. And in 2020, at the Adventist Health Study, they found a clear-cut relationship. The more dairy women ate, the higher the risk of breast cancer. And so we now believe that to avoid breast cancer, the amount of cow's milk and other animal milks you consume should be zero. You shouldn't give them to children, should not consume them in adulthood. The cow's milk was designed for a calf, and that's kind of the end of the sentence.
Now, you mentioned that it's also important for men. Men might be watching this and say, well, I don't have estrogen receptors, but that's not actually true, is it?
Oh, men's bodies have estrogens in them, and all you have to do is go to a beach on a hot summer day, and you will see guys who have some breast enhancement. And this is really caused by two things. Part of it could be the estradiol in the cheese. The bigger part of it really is that as they're eating animal products and other fatty foods, and as they're gaining weight, their fat cells, the fat cells on a man's body, convert their testosterone to estrogens. And yes, those estrogens are biologically active in their body. So the reason, and men have a word for this. They call it man boobs. This is the locker room name. And the mythology on the internet was blame soy. Let me tell you something. Those guys are not eating tofu. They're not having edamame. They're getting it from cheese, and they're getting it from the animal products that make them gain weight. And they are converting their own testosterone to estradiol in their body fat. The answer to that is that Hank ought to go on a low-fat vegan diet. He will trim down, his waistline will trim down. He will have less body fat to make estrogens, and he will get his manhood back.
Awesome. That is such good news for Hank. But tell me what he will also gain in the area of prostate cancer.
Well, a couple of things. Dairy products clearly increase the risk of prostate cancer. About 20 years ago, this was controversial. We've now had so many studies that I don't think it's disputable. Men who consume the most milk have the highest risk of prostate cancer, including aggressive and fatal prostate cancers. So we really should be avoiding dairy. In this case, the estradiol could be part of the reason, but I think a bigger part is a compound called IGF-1 or insulin-like growth factor. It makes cancer cells grow. So we really think that's part of the problem. And by the way, if Hank needs more motivation for this, what we have found in our research studies is that when men get the animal products out of their diet, their erectile function improves dramatically. Getting all that junk out of your diet allows the blood flow, which is where it's at. It allows the blood flow to improve.
And what about Hank's baldness? Is there an impact there?
Because about his hair. About
testosterone, yes. What if he has a family history of balding?
You know, it's a funny thing. Back in the 1980s, let's say, Japan had a mostly plant-based diet. It was not entirely. There was some meat, but it was really mostly rice, little bits of meat, no dairy at all. And as the diet started to westernize, you know, the fast food chains all came into Tokyo and Osaka, and the diet westernized really fast. And it went from a country that really did not consume dairy at all to a country that was eating a lot of dairy and other Western products, more meat. In the process, breast cancer rates went up, diabetes went up, waistlines expanded. But dermatologists started to report they were seeing much more baldness than before. What we think is happening is baldness is in part genetic. If you have the genes for it, it can happen to you. But what really causes it to manifest are hormones. And when the hormones go a little kooky, that's when the baldness comes out. So that's what we were thinking is happening in Japan. And you don't have to be in Japan. You can be anywhere. If you're eating a low-fat plant-based diet, that seems to be the best recipe for a healthy head of hair.
Now let's switch to talking about food for the soul. Have you ever tried a luscious fresh fig before? They're an amazing fruit. They contain almost 3 times the amount of calcium as any other fruit. Their fiber content makes them a wonderful prebiotic. And they're a good source of antioxidants.
Figs are actually mentioned in the Bible over 60 times. One story really interests me. The king of Judah, his name was Hezekiah, he became very sick because of an infection from a boil. He thought he was going to die. So he prayed, and God promised him he wouldn't die, he would live, and gave instructions on how to cure the boil. He was to take a poultice of figs and put it over the boil. While that story is so full of many lessons, one that stands out to me is about prayer. Prayer is opening our hearts to God and letting Him know what's happening in our lives. Prayer is having quiet time with God to meditate on His promises, for self-reflection and personal accountability. In the busyness of our lives, it's too easy to not take that time for ourselves or for God. So why not try quiet time with God today and see what happens? While you're at it, go and try a fig. The dry ones are great too. When you have that sweet fig, let it remind you of how sweet it is to spend time with God every day. Welcome back. Exercise releases chemical compounds in the brain that boosts cognition and focus. And what's not to like about that, right, Sean?
Listen, I am a proponent of exercise, right? So today we're going to get the heart rate going. The goal for today is a cardio exercise. And for you guys out there, just to get the heart rate moving, okay? So again, we're going to start with a warm up. Just to start off, we're going to move the arms a little bit, kind of get your mind going, relax the body. What I want you to do is think about inhaling through your nose, exhaling through your mouth. Relax the body. Even though your heart rate is going up, you still have an opportunity to get prepared for exercise. In 3, 2, and 1, shake it out a little bit. So today we have 3 exercises, all right? 3. The first is gonna be your jumping jack. Nice and easy, taking your time. I don't want you to rush too much here, okay? Again, coming all the way up and all the way down. We do have the modified version. So Doc, you have the modified version, stepping out. Maharani, what you're doing right there, taking your time, working on your breathing, okay? The goal here is to start, all right? And to get your heart rate pumping, right? So about 30 seconds is sufficient. In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Take a nice deep breather. So if your heart rate is up, that's a good thing, right? You want to get up, especially if you're sitting at the desk often, all right? Exercise number 2 would be your heel clicks, all right? It looks like this at the end, but we do have some modified versions, all right? Number 1, if you cannot get your legs up, you can always start by bringing your knee up and touching your knee, right? Bring your leg up and touch your knee. Breathe, all right? As you get a little bit more flexible, then you can touch the calf, all right? And then ultimately going to the sneaker, okay? The faster you go, the higher your heart rate goes, and that's exactly what I want. I want you to work a little bit. You're gonna feel it in the glutes, all right? 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Shake it off a little bit. Where are you gonna feel it? right in those glutes, right? If you sit a lot, the outside of the legs, right? The goal here, again, raise the heart rate, get it primed up. Jumping jacks got you up. Heel clicks working your arms, your legs a little bit. Number three, we're gonna go alternating lateral lunge. Taking a nice deep breath. Again, looks like this ultimately. Here, come back to the center and back to the other side. Sometimes you could stick with one side at a time, but the goal here is to alternate. So again, my foot is pointing forward. My leg moves over to that side. Come back here, other side. Now, not everybody can do this. So what I want you to do, if you have difficulty doing it, kind of just start, just moving a little bit, right? And what will happen again, with your body getting warmed up, you will start to feel more flexible. It's like a frozen rubber band, right? When that rubber band comes out, it gets warmer, your body gets more limber, you're working on your breathing, and ultimately, I want you to just get down as low as you can go, okay? In 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. So three awesome exercises, again, to get the heart rate going. Your jumping jacks, about 30 seconds. Your heel clicks, about 30 seconds. Go as fast as you can go. Your alternating lunges for about 30 seconds, okay? Now let's cool it down, all right? So take a nice deep breath, relax the shoulders. Your heart rate is gonna be up a bit. So the goal for you is to roll back. Inhale through your nose, exhale through your mouth. Shoulders may be a little tight from doing the jumping jacks. We're gonna go forward. And what I want you to do is actually extend your legs out to the side a little bit. And I want you to open your hands up and kind of reach down. Your goal here is to kind of stretch your back a little bit. You may be a little bit tight, especially if you're one that sits at the desk, if you're driving a lot. The goal here is for you to feel good at the end of exercise. Come up nice and slow. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Roll the shoulders back one more time. And the last exercise, bring that arm across the body. Again, working on the breathing. It's so easy for us to forget to breathe, right? So inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth. Subsides. 3, 2, 1. Shake it off, and we are good to go.
Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome. Good job. Great job.
Can you think of a flavor that's popular in everything from drinks to salads, meat dishes to cocktails, toothpaste to peas, ice cream to breath mints? Oh, I just gave the riddle away. I'm talking, of course, about mint. There are over 600 varieties of mint, including spearmint and peppermint. Mint not only provides that fresh taste to everything it's added to, it's also good for digestive problems, including irritable bowel syndrome. One of my favorite ways to enjoy mint is in hot mint tea or cold mint drinks. That minty taste adds a little afterburn to warm tea in the winter, and strangely in the summer, it adds a cool freshness. If you want to be a bit more fancy, you can add a little lemon and honey to complete that. Mint drinks are delicious and a great healthy alternative to coffee, tea, and colas. Bon appetit. Now it's question time, and here's our first question. Someone emailed, does having periods past the age of 55 increase the risk of breast cancer, and what should I do about it? Well, it is true that increased exposure or a longer duration of exposure to estrogen increases the risk of breast cancer. The fact that you're still having periods means your ovaries worked a little longer than the average woman and has been giving you estrogen for that bit longer. Now, that can be a good thing for your bones, your heart, for memory and cognitive function, but the downside is that slightly increased risk of both breast and endometrial cancer. So celebrate the benefits and minimize the risks by ensuring you keep a normal weight, you avoid alcohol, get daily exercise, and of course have regular breast screening. Someone called, I've been told I have osteoporosis. Do you think one diet soda a day could be contributing? Well, research tells us there is a link between soda and osteoporosis. It may be that carbonated drinks contain high levels of phosphoric acid, which leaches calcium from the bones, and so you lose it. Some sodas contain caffeine that's also linked to osteoporosis, so soda has no benefits, and if I were you, I'd be passing it up.
Marissa asks, I have an 8-month-old boy who's still breastfed and taking some solids. I want to introduce him to soy products like tofu or a soy smoothie. But I've heard that soy has feminine hormones that are not good for young boys. Is that true? Well, Marissa, what you've heard is true. There are plant compounds in soy that bind to our estrogen receptors, and boys and girls both have estrogen receptors. But a moderate intake of soy, which is what you're planning, is healthy for boys and girls. For men, it's going to reduce the risk of prostate cancer, and for women, it reduces the risk of breast cancer. And getting it earlier in life is going to be more protective. For a baby who's not weaned and is only drinking soy milk all day, there's some concern they might get too much estrogen, though it's never been proven to be a problem, and many babies are raised on soy infant formula. So I'd encourage you to give him moderate amounts of soy in his food. Let him enjoy it. If you have a question, send it in by Facebook, text, email or phone. Like us on Facebook to become part of our Go Healthy for Good community. In the last segment, Dr. Barnard was talking about genes and hormones interacting to trigger baldness in men. I asked him if this is also relevant for women and whether foods can regulate hormones and or genetic expression for women as well.
To a degree, and this is important for women too, because women get the same genes as men. It's just a question of if their hormones go out of balance too. So their hormones are in the best balance when you have four foods making up your dietary staples. Those are whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and legumes or beans. And those foods, they sound really simple, and they are, but they turn into all sorts of wonderful foods, and they happen to be the same kind of thing that the strongest animals eat. You know, if you look at elephants and gorillas and bulls and stallions, I mean, they are all vegan. They're all eating plant-based diets.
Good point. Good point. So let's flip back to women. And you mentioned the pain of menstrual cycle. That's especially a problem for women with endometriosis or adenomyosis, where the lining of the uterus migrates to places it shouldn't be and causes pain. Have you found that the whole food plant-based diet helps in that situation as well?
We believe it does. And I'm gonna be a bit cautious about this. For people who have heard of endometriosis, but were never sure what it is, it's as you're saying, it's those cells that line the uterus that have now, they're cropping up outside the uterus, and they can attach to the ovaries and fallopian tubes and even to the intestinal tract, and they grow and they bleed and they scar and they hurt. And it's driven by estrogens. So we have every reason to believe that when a woman is on a high fiber, low fat diet, it should help. But here's where we are with this. We have lots of anecdotal information that this is correct. There are a lot of women who have tried the diet I'm describing, low fat, healthy vegan diet, and their endometriosis has improved or just remitted completely. However, nobody has done a randomized trial specifically of endometriosis. We've done them here with women with menstrual pain that could be what I'm going to call primary dysmenorrhea or endometriosis. And we are just now starting a study specifically on endometriosis. So we'll have those findings a little bit later this year.
Wow, I look forward to those coming out. Now, most women will experience PMS or premenstrual symptoms or syndrome, but for some that's really, really difficult. It causes irritability, bloating, all kinds of symptoms for 3 or 4 days before a period. Tell us about the research you've done on that problem.
Yes, we have found that, let's say a woman's, her cycle is just, the changes are exaggerated for her. More pain, excessive flow. It's often preceded by physical changes, water retention and bloating, but also psychological changes where the moodiness make you feel, and that kind of thing makes you feel like this is just not me, and you're afraid are other people noticing that one might be a little bit on edge. We did find that within just a couple of cycles, about 1 month or 2 months, on the same kind of diet that I'm describing that tackles estrogen, really high fiber, really low fat, not only does the pain diminish, but the water retention, the bloating, the personality changes tend to improve as well. And mood tends to get on a more even keel.
That's such good news. Now, fertility is really on the rise in our society now. And so many couples are needing to go for artificial
fertility treatment. So why this rise? Do you think it's related to diet? What's the evidence?
I think it is. That fertility is a very fragile thing. This is true for women and for men. Researchers have looked at men. You know, you need appropriate sperm counts, sperm morphology and motility, meaning they've got to be the right shape, they've got to swim straight. And if they don't, nothing happens. Researchers found that one food in particular can reduce a man's sperm quality. And it is cheese. You might have guessed it. It's just this big load of estrogen that the man is eating, and it will affect sperm quality. Now, for women, you have a number of things that can contribute. One is just what you might call hormone haywire, where if estrogens are really off, just not in the right balance, that can be really harmful. If body weight is either too high, or in some cases, if it's really too low, that will interfere with things too. And a plant-based diet can get the body weight closer to the fertility sweet spot. PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, it's really a genetically based excess of androgens, male hormones. But along with it comes insulin resistance and other things that are strongly, that can be improved by food changes exactly along the same lines that we've talked about. So we've worked with lots of women who are dealing with PCOS or the other conditions that we've described. And whatever medical treatments a person may be doing, whatever other evaluations you're doing today, bring the healthy foods into your routine. And it is remarkable the effects that people have. And we've seen lots of women who come in here saying they are infertile. They're coming in for some other reason. And often with a diet change, that infertility diagnosis gets erased from their chart surprisingly quickly.
And does exercise help with fertility while we're talking about
it? Surprisingly enough, yes. And a person would have thought exactly the opposite. You know, you can imagine the marathon runner who's gotten so thin. And you think, you know, it's got to suppress fertility. It turns out that when women are really physically active, that actually improves fertility. However, you have to make sure you're eating enough and make sure that your body fat layer is not completely shot. So yes, when people are eating normal amounts, exercise is actually good for it. So no, sitting on the couch with a remote in your hand is not going to bring fertility.
So ladies, if you're struggling to get pregnant, build vigorous exercise into your daily schedule. And when we come back from the break, Chef Nick Stroot is in the kitchen with a tempting treat.
Everybody knows that kale, the superfood, is one of the most popular foods these days. And this recipe, I'm gonna show you how to incorporate it in a very simple dish. We're gonna do kale pesto pasta. To start off with, we've got 4 cloves of garlic. Everything's gonna be blended here. So we'll just go ahead and put that in. And then we've got our fresh kale. And I wanna go ahead and strip the leaves off of this, one by one. This one happens to be a purple kale. Regular kale, green kale, whatever, will work fine. And then just to make it a little easier on the blender, I'm just gonna chop some of these pieces up, make it a little bit smaller. Chopping greens is one of the ways that it's easiest to cut your fingers. So again, with that technique of keeping your fingers rolled back and having your knife only touching on your knuckles like that. Keep those fingers right out of the way. All right. That should be enough there. Okay, olive oil. And of course we have to have some salt. And lemon juice for that acidity. And then yeast flakes, of course, always more yeast flakes. Okay, and so for pesto, usually a lot of people use pine nuts. Those are so expensive. Walnuts are very healthy. And in this recipe, kale is a pretty strong vegetable, pretty strong leafy green. So the walnuts will work great with that. All right, got everything together. And we're just gonna blend this. When we blend it, I don't want to go to like smoothie, but we're going to go, it can be a little bit chunky still. We'll check this out. A little better. Oftentimes that happens with blenders. You have to take the lid back off and kind of stir things around manually. There we go. And there's enough moisture in the kale that it's not just the lemon juice and the olive oil that will keep things going. All right, let's blend it again. I like the way that looks. It does have some bigger pieces in it, but that's okay for a little bit of texture. It always adds a nice touch to the dish. So you can see this made, oh, probably around a cup, maybe a little more. I would put this in a container and keep it airtight if you're gonna save it for the next day. But this time we're gonna put everything in this dish. And we're using fettuccine on this for our pasta this time. Anytime you're cooking pasta, you always add some salt to the water. So usually the rule is 1 pound of pasta and 1 tablespoon of salt in the water. So pretty much you don't have to measure it out. You can pretty much just eyeball it, and just as long as you're adding some in. And we'll just mix this all around. And I like the way that the pasta has dried just a little bit. So the pesto is sticking to the noodles, and it'll coat them all real good. You get that nice flavor in each bite. And so whenever you add the salt to the water in the pasta, it infuses more salt, or it infuses salt into the pasta so that it's less flat and it doesn't take away from the salt that is in the ingredients for the whatever you're putting on the pasta. Okay. That's mixed around pretty good. And this one I can imagine would be very good for taking to go to lunch, packing it up for lunch. And it's also quick enough that you can throw together that evening for dinner. And here we have our kale pesto pasta.
Wow, healthy, tasty, quick, and easy. Plus, pasta is a winner for everyone. Today's guest is Dr. Neil Barnard, author of the book Your Body in Balance, which is all about hormones. Malfunction of the thyroid gland can make a huge difference to health and well-being. I asked him why.
Well, thyroid hormone is this Clark Kent of the world. It's something nobody realized that the Superman was inside. Your thyroid is right here at the base of your neck. Who knew it was there? But the hormone that it produces gives you energy. It goes to the cells of the body, and if you don't have it, everything kind of goes wrong. Your mood can go wrong. Physically, you don't feel well. Your metabolism slows. You'll find that your weight is a little harder to deal with. And that's hypothyroidism. And there are really two issues here with regard to diet. One is iodine. And back a century ago, iodized salt came in the U.S. and then in other countries too. And that provided traces of iodine. Now, if you lived in Japan, you wouldn't care about that, because seaweed is nature's source of iodine. The nori that's around your sushi or whatever it is, loads and loads of iodine, very healthy. But if you live smack in the middle of the country and you're not, you know, seaweed is not something you ever had, the iodine sources are a little more remote. But it's important to have iodine regularly. But the bigger reason, actually, the more common reason in Western countries for sluggish thyroid is antibodies. And what we think is happening is that meat or dairy, some foreign protein, or what your body recognizes as a foreign protein, causes your body to make antibodies that end up attacking the thyroid. And this is called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, low thyroid. Or if those antibodies attack your ability to turn the thyroid off, then you end up with hyperthyroidism or Graves' disease. And when researchers have looked at different dietary patterns, just as you might have guessed, the people who are not eating meat and not eating dairy have the lowest risk of either of those conditions. And our explanation for it is that the dairy protein or the meat protein or maybe egg proteins are causing the immune system to run a little bit overtime, and we want to cool it out if we can.
And soy is the other question here. People often ask me, well, should I stop eating soy because I have thyroid disease? So I'm going to throw that question to you.
I think we could use some more research, but for the moment, the best evidence now says that soy is okay. Now, one caveat, anything else that we do does not take the place of having adequate iodine in your diet. It doesn't matter what you eat or what you avoid. If you don't give your thyroid some iodine, it can't make thyroid hormone. So you've got to do that. And if you are, there has been some evidence that when women are really low in iodine and they're adding soy, that might tip them more into hypothyroidism. But that appears to be not a problem if they're getting normal amounts of iodine. So that's job one. The other thing is, don't have soy or anything else to eat when you're taking your medication. If you're on thyroid replacement, if you're on a thyroid supplement, it's got to be on an empty stomach. So it's not just soy. You can't have anything right before or right after, because that's going to delay or really reduce the absorption.
Right. So the empty stomach didn't matter whether it was soy or not. Now, acne surges in adolescence when their hormones are surging. So, and when I have dermatologists here on the show and I ask them this question, they say, no, food has nothing to do with it. They'll give me some other reason. But that's not actually true, is it?
It's not true. And adolescent intuition has really come to the fore. And, you know, they'll say, I'm pretty sure chocolate is doing this to me, or dairy and cheese is doing this to me. You know what? They're right more often than not. Researchers years ago did a test about chocolate. And chocolate seemed to be exonerated. And every dermatologist has remembered that study. But if you go back and look at the study, what they did is they actually compared chocolate to another snack food that they created that was just as greasy as the chocolate. And both groups did equally badly. And so take-home message of that was, chocolate isn't the problem. They were just wrong. And you can show this yourself. But we should really say another word about dairy if we haven't beaten up on poor dairy enough already. There are a lot of people who do very badly with dairy, including the skim dairy. I think we could use more research here, but it's a pretty good idea to be avoiding the dairy products. They seem to trigger all kinds of reactions, including acne for some people.
Mm. So give us a quick summary. What are the things we should be eating?
Well, the healthiest foods.
To put our body in balance, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. The healthiest foods are in four groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. And it's good to keep oils low too. Now, we were so used to extra virgin olive oil and so forth, but keep in mind, to make that oil, they had to throw away all the rest of the plant. So it's much better to eat the whole food rather than adding lots of oils. And for whatever reason, we have found that when people eat those four foods, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, and all the things that they turn into, whether it's the spaghetti marinara or the bean burrito or the veggie chili or the cucumber sushi roll, whatever it is, those are healthy foods. Avoiding the animal products is a really good idea. Keeping oils low. One last trick. We just found that what's essentially a cure for hot flashes, and that's vegan, low fat, and add soybeans. Half a cup of cooked soybeans every day. That knocked out hot flashes by about 84%.
84%. Wow, yeah. That will be such good news to a lot of our viewers. So thank you so much. Last question. When you say low fat, are we still allowed to have our avocados, our olives?
Here's the way I handle that. I suggest if a person's dealing with pain, or if they've got hot flashes, or if they got weight they want to lose, for now, set even those fatty foods aside. And as time goes on, and if your pain is gone, if your hot flashes are gone, if you're feeling well, and now you want to see, can I maybe bring some of those fatty foods back? Do it at that point. But I'd rather cure you first and then play around with it a little bit later on.
Great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Such sound advice. Remember that hormones control your body and food controls your hormones. Ladies, if you have menstrual problems, premenstrual syndrome, or endometriosis, you can reduce your circulating estrogen by increasing fiber, cutting back on fats and oils, and staying away from animal products, especially dairy. That dairy contains estradiol. The same goes if you've had breast cancer. Avoid the dairy and instead eat plenty of soy to put the brakes on those cancer cells. For menopausal symptoms, we just learned that half a cup of soya beans a day reduces hot flashes by a whopping 84%. And men should avoid excess fat and dairy to protect their prostate, to reduce estrogen, and therefore improve fertility, erectile dysfunction, and perhaps even prevent or slow baldness. Thanks for joining us today. I'll see you next time.